And then we're coming alongside of them with resources and training and instructional coaching and systems coaching, you know, the coaching for, you know, making sure that the system is running smoothly so the teachers and the staff can implement the practice as well. So they partner with us. In some cases, we have sort of partner agreements. We're doing this and you guys are doing this. We're sharing data. We're doing things like that. But we're really working in concert with each other, not us telling them or anything like that in sort of a hierarchical way. We're not doing that. We're really trying to model the importance of collaboration and partnering around implementation to, you know, ultimately, it's about the outcomes for kids.
Right.
Ensuring that all kids, if this is your homeschool, and this is where you live, we should be well equipped to support you in that learning in your homeschool. And that really is kind of our motto that we lead with.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Brighter Together podcast. My name is Janet Courtney, and my special guest today is Kelly Rogers. Kelly is the special education coordinator at Charlevoix Emmett ISD in Charlevoix, Michigan. Kelly, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for so much for having me.
So, Kelly, tell us a little bit about your role and a little bit about Charlevoix Emmett and what you guys do there.
Yeah, so I am the special education coordinator. I'm a school psychologist by training and a BCBA, a board certified behavior analyst. And in my role as a special ed coordinator, I kind of have four buckets of work. One of them is I'm the monitor for special education for the IEPs, for compliance, for quality practice, et cetera, around the delivery of special ed services for students with disabilities in our entire region. I also am the transition coordinator. So I work with our students who are 14 through high school age, and then working with our teams that work with students 18 to 26 that are receiving special education services. I'm also the PBIS coordinator. So I coordinate all of our PBIS work in the region and our ABA work. So we do have a lane where we're hiring BCBAs and training our paraprofessionals to be registered behavior technicians to support kids with our most complex behavioral needs. So I coordinate that work as well.
So tell our audience what PBIS is. We love our acronyms, and I want to
make sure that
everybody knows what that one is.
Yeah, so we could probably have full conversations with just acronyms, right?
I know, right?
But PBIS, Positive Behavioral Interventions and Supports.
Okay.
It is a framework. It's really under an umbrella of multi-tiered systems of support.
TSS, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this is sort of the behavior, social, emotional learning end of that MTSS. We actually at SHRM rebranded our PBIS a few years ago. We call it PBIS Plus. And the plus is an intentional integration in the framework for things like trauma, presumed, social emotional learning, of course, mental health services, neurodiversity affirming services, making sure that everything we're doing under the umbrella of PBIS is also, we're wearing the lens of supporting really all students and students that come with a variety of different learning needs.
I love that you guys are looking at neurodiversity too, because that is something that I really think has been a positive change in our thinking towards special education. Because
yes.
Just because not everybody thinks the same way, I have a son who identifies as being very neurodivergent. We do not think alike. He and I. He's intelligent, and he's 26, and he's just an amazing human being. But he and I very much don't think the same way, and it affects how he does things. And you know, obviously he's independent and he works for me, but you know, but it's so important that we've made that, identified that as something that just because you don't think the way that quote the normal person does, doesn't mean that you're disabled necessarily, right?
No, and we've really taken the lead from the voice of individuals that would identify as neurodivergent, which includes students with autism and autism-related needs, but also ADHD, even with dyslexia and learning disabilities, et cetera, that broad umbrella that some of them we call a disability, but that's really to access services.
Right.
It doesn't, how we engage and learn together is not a disability.
Right.
So.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the labels don't define the individual. and they never should.
Absolutely.
And we know that. And that's the other beautiful thing is like, we get it. We get that. And educators and special educators, the disability does not define the person. The disability is a way for us to figure out how to help that person to be successful. And that's so important. So it's such an incredible distinction that has been made in the last 50 years that is In my experience, changing how you think about education and how you think about what you're doing in special education. And as a special educator, you know, it's so important. So, yeah. So anyway, sorry, I took us down that road, and let's pull it back. I want to really talk about the things because you guys are doing some amazing things, and I really want people to hear about the things that you are doing to help support your students. So tell us about Charlevoix and the things that you guys have done that is bringing student success.
Yeah, I think one of them is our PBIS initiative, PBIS Plus, making sure that, and of course I am a BCBA, I'm a behavior analyst, and I think the field has taken a hit around not being neurodivergent and not leading with assent practices and being more focused on compliance and things like that. So I feel like for us, we have really taken a forward step to ensure that our implementation of all of our behavior supports carry that lens. And in that work, we recently hired a couple years ago someone who their title is Director of Implementation, but they're really helping us. And I'm super excited about this work because we're taking MTSS at large to a bigger capacity, where before we were kind of really focused on the implementation of PBIS, and that's kind of the path that we took to implement MTSS. Mm-hmm. However, we know the tight connection between academics and behavior,
right?
That many times when we're looking at behavior and we're trying to look at root cause of behavior, the root cause is the academic issues, but we're not addressing the instructional design and our instructional strategies to address that, which then the side effect is reducing behavior. So knowing that those two things can't be in separate silos, we're really taking an intentional effort to support our school districts in implementing MTSS as a collaborative effort and looking at both the lens of social, emotional, behavioral, and academic all in one. And so we continue to grow that. I just had a meeting this morning, in fact, where we've been doing some combined learning. So the other kind of focus we've had is we've lived in silos for so long. Our departments are functioning in silos, and our leadership has taken a very important step in saying we can't function that way. We can't pull the kid apart in all these different silos. We need to come together, both as an organization, as an ISD, but also supporting our districts in leading with collaboration. And so this year, we've taken some steps with our own staff of including, so the professional learning that our staff are getting includes the special education staff, the instructional services, which sort of the general ed side of things, our CTE and transition related teams, our early childhood, all coming together and engaging in learning around MTSS, both the academic and behavioral side of that, and database decision making. We've developed, based on a number of different resources, our own version, if you will, of a database decision making process. And we're going to really roll that out, that it doesn't matter who the team is or what data you're looking at, that these are the steps that we can engage in so we can have common language and things like that. So That's a huge endeavor.
Yeah.
Even for a small, I would consider us to be more of a smaller ISD or area. It's a big endeavor. And so I'm really appreciative of our leadership taking us down this path.
So you implement it at the ISD, but then you also provide training, help people that maybe don't even understand how that what that marriage between the ISD and the districts is, and how you're implementing that from what you're doing at this level to how you're going to do that at maybe what would happen at an elementary school or a middle school or whatever, a local school district.
Yeah. So the intermediate school district, we cover, in terms of our support, we cover Emmett County, Charlevoix County, and a couple schools out of Antrim County. Those districts are in our region. Mm-hmm. And so in our region, meaning that if the way our ISD is set up, we provide all the special education related services. So our social workers, school psychs, speech and language therapists, et cetera, are assigned to a district, but they work for the ISD on behalf of the districts to do assessments, to do service provision for special education, et cetera. So and then we have a lane of instructional services where we have teacher consultants, we have literacy consultants, we have other folks who support, even for students who don't have IEPs, who support the districts in implementing. For example, we have the new dyslexia law here in Michigan. And so supporting schools and making decisions about curriculum and screeners and assessments and things like that. So with our work under MTSS, with our PDIS, we have been engaging schools before I even came here. This is my fifth year with SHRM, engaging schools and implementing that. So we have our staff actually sits on their school leadership teams that implement their school and or district implementation of PBIS. We're just mirroring that process with the literacy now. We're starting with literacy academic side. And so we meet with those. We have our staff will meet with their teams monthly. Sometimes we're sitting on their school team. Sometimes it's like grade level teams, but they have their own team structures of how they're implementing practices in their buildings and in their district. And then we're coming alongside of them with resources and training and instructional coaching and systems coaching, you know, the coaching for, you know, making sure that the system is running smoothly so the teachers and the staff can implement the practice as well. They partner with us in some cases. We have sort of partner agreements. We're doing this and you guys are doing this. We're sharing data. We're doing things like that. But we're really working in concert with each other, not us telling them or anything like that in sort of a hierarchical way. We're not doing that. We're really trying to model the importance of collaboration and partnering around implementation to, you know, ultimately, it's about the outcomes for kids. Right. Ensuring that all kids, if this is your home school and this is where you live, we should be well equipped to support you in that learning in your home school. And that really is kind of our motto that we, you know, lead with.
And a lot of times the ISDs will provide a service that that school might not else have a way to get that service, correct? So,
especially, you know, in rural areas, you know, we have small districts that may only have three or four kids that have some more significant needs. We do run, I guess, another lane of what I'm proud of is our work around LRE or least restrictive environment, ensuring that we're not restricting kids' access to general education arbitrarily, that we're using good database decision makings to ensure that they can receive their education in their home school with their neighbor kids. And in that work, we're really committed to ensuring that all of our staff is well equipped through training, professional learning, coaching, and then supporting the schools in that as well. So many of those schools, you know, with only three or four kids that have significant needs wouldn't be equipped to provide the services alone, in that they need partners to do that. And we do run some self-contained classrooms for kids that FAPE for them or free appropriate public education for them is a more or most restrictive setting.
Right. Right. And that's typical in what you see from ISDs that I've seen when I lived in Michigan for 19 years, as we talked about before. And that tended to be the model, you know, like if they really have that significant emotional or more cognitive deficits or physical deficits, that they need that hands-on one-on-one the whole time. That those classrooms tended to be at the ISDs, and then everything else, every other way possible, kids are getting services at their local schools and you guys are
supporting
that.
Yeah, we've done a couple things. One is we're trying to build the capacity for local schools to run those programs as well.
Okay.
So we're really, we kind of lead with the question, like, what would it take for this child to be able to be educated there?
Right.
That's one kind of approach we've taken. A second approach is even for the kids who are technically attending a classroom that we are running, the ISD is running, many of those classrooms are located out in local districts.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
And the nice benefit of that is they can have, you know, time in general ed and with general ed peers, even though they're in a much more restrictive placement. And we have been, our schools have been, our districts have been phenomenal about, because sometimes the kids that are attending those classrooms, that isn't their local district.
Right.
You know, they might live in a different district and they're attending a classroom, but our schools have been so phenomenal about collaborating and really negotiating how to ensure that those kids can have access to general ed time as well, even though that's not their resident school. So I'm proud of that work as well.
There is a crisis in this country, a massive shortage of special education teachers. We know how devastating this can be for your students, families, and staff. Lighthouse Therapy places experienced special education teachers in virtual, hybrid, and on-site roles, and we handle everything from hiring to onboarding to mentorship. These aren't just placements, they're professionals who understand compliance, collaboration, and care. Let us help you fill in the gaps with special education teachers who really understand. We are here to help. Visit lighthouse-therapy.com/brighter together to connect with us today. And it's so important too, not just for those kids, but also for the other students to have, to see that, you know, there are children that are different than them, but they aren't being separated. They are children that are in the lunchroom, that are in the, that are on the playground, that are whatever. And it's just, it's so, it's such a good thing. It's such a good thing to see that happen. So I'm glad you guys are doing
that. Yeah, I spent a good portion of my career at the START Project, the Statewide Autism Resources and Training Project, which is an MDE funded, Michigan Department of Ed funded project out of Grand Valley State University. And really Michigan leads the country in the implementation of peer-to-peer support for students with, really it starts with autism, but it really is about any students who have those social needs. And so peer-to-peer is using general education peers and setting up, supporting those peers in befriending and engaging with their friends who have different learning needs. And that project has just, you know, blossomed in Michigan. I don't even know what the numbers are currently of programs that we have running. And you can hear story after story. You can go on the START website, in fact, and just watch video after video because it's out of the mouths of babes.
Right.
It's the kids without differences that will tell the story of their own learning. We almost, you know, the jury's done and gone on the benefits to the kids with disabilities
in
having general ed peers. But it really is the peers that are learning sometimes even more about acceptance, about understanding, about, you know, how to live in a culture where we all have different learning needs and we can all be accepted and really, frankly, what's the word I'm looking for? People see it as a strength, your difference as a strength,
right?
You know, in relationships.
Yeah,
so.
I love that. And it just, it's just so, what we talked about earlier, what I alluded to earlier was that it's not their disability that defines them. It's they're a human being. They're a child with wants and needs and desires, just like every other child. And giving the kids the opportunity and not shoving them into a corner where, you know, you know, we talk about the baby boomers, you know, and we were baby. I'm at the very edge of, am I a baby boomer? I'm a Gen X. I'm a, born in 67. So it's like, I always have, was one of those, which one do I belong to? I tend to be more of a Gen Xer now, but baby boomers were seen and not heard. You know, that was how they were. And when you had a disability, you were really not heard, right? You were just shoved in. And we don't do that anymore. And not everybody did that. And I'm doing a very, very generalization. Please don't think that anybody who's hearing this, please don't think that I think everybody did that. but it has changed. There has been a significant shift. Yes, it was common, and there's been a significant shift, and it's a positive shift. And, you know, that's the part that I think that we just, again, as Brighter Together, we talk about the good things that are happening. So tell me when you are talking about, you do the education, you do the professional development, then how does that then trickle down? I know you're sending people out, right? But what do you do with the, say I'm a new teacher and I'm a new teacher at XYZ school district, and I was educated as a general education teacher. How is this going to affect my job and what I do? Because I'm going to have some of those students in my classroom, and I may have had a minor or a class in special education, but I haven't had behavioral supports in the way that you're talking about. How would that affect and what you're doing help me?
Yeah, we really, we work with the building team, whoever that might be, and we have a number of tools. We use what's called the TFI, or the Tiered Fidelity Inventory, as more of a systems tool. We have a number of practice tools where the district or the school themselves is indicating, this is what I need support for. Okay. And one of the things that's probably the top of the list that we hear all the time is new staff. Turnover is right. Big.
Yep.
And we've got new staff, and how do we get them on board? So we can come to them. We have trainers around our PBIS work. We have one kind of a 101, if you will, training, if it's specific to behavior, that is called Trauma Presumed Behavior Supports. And it really is PBIS 101 layered in all the neurodiversity and all of those pieces as well. Really talking deep in the neuroscience and the behavior science. Oh, and nice. So we'll come to them and do training for their whole staff on days that they have available. We actually just got access to what's called Articulate Rise, and it is an online system where you can create online trainings. So we're going to backfill, because sometimes we just can't get people to training. There aren't subs. There's a billion barriers. We try to do Zoom when we can. We try to do recordings when we can. But Articulate Rise is sort of an asynchronous way that you could get information to folks and more kind of do almost, I think they call it sometimes reverse classroom, where, you know, watch this, and then we're going to have a Zoom meeting for a couple hours where we're just digging into and answering questions and kind of what you, a case study, things like that. So we're trying to be creative about the old days, if you want to call it that, of professional learning, where, okay, on, you know, January 3rd, we're having a training, come one, come all, you know, those days are really going the way of the dinosaur for a variety of different variables. And so we've been trying to be very creative about multiple ways to access information. And in the TikTok world, honestly, it's not with a full day. It's people are taking in information in small snippets. So how do we make these be, here's a strategy for this type of issue. And so that they could have a library of things they can go to, as I have a student who's having, you know, seems to function, seems to be this, they're doing this behavior under these conditions, what might be some ideas. And we've got a library of two or three strategies, instructional strategies, behavioral strategies, social emotional strategies that they can pull from. So that's all currently in the works, you know, as we proceed.
Yeah, it's the world of technology. You know, I run a teletherapy company, and we do virtual, and we do some hybrid, and we've dipped our toe in person. But, you know, it's like you can get services and you can get information very quickly in a way that is non-traditional now, you know, and you can get therapists and you can get special education teachers and all of that in a way that's very non-traditional. And, you know, some people like it, some people don't, but the reality is it's not going away. It's not going to go away because because AI and AI is just making it even more access, you know, access to education, access to the information. And when I love the fact that if I have this child that's exhibiting these behaviors, how do I help them? What do I do?
Yeah.
So if I can go and I can look up, I'm seeing XYZ and help me to understand how I serve that child. And then I've got, you're giving me 3, 4, 5, 6 things to do. And one of those is one of those might be the golden goose, right? You know, or the golden right. egg that fixed for the, and then you've helped that child and I haven't had to sit in a 6-hour training that I might bring 2 pieces away from, you know, if you have
exactly.
that database, because you did get tired, you know, there's a fatigue that goes on. I always say that at conferences, by the time I get to the last one, I'm like, okay, am I really learning anything yeah. here? Or am I just trying to get this continuing ed because I need it, you know? And that's why I love that for our team. One of the things we have for our team is speech therapy PD. We contract with them so that our staff can go and get those trainings and not have to go wherever, right. you know, it's a beautiful thing. It really is. I really am.
Well, and we're also,
yeah. No, go ahead.
Yeah, we're also trying to, you know, that's one end of it. The other end of it is we tend to be, I think it's just human nature, but it's like, I've got a problem. What's my solution?
Right.
Forgetting to really dissect.
Yeah.
And forgetting to look at, do we have the good foundational things in place? Have we tried some less intensive, like tier 2 intervention? And so with our MTSS lens, it's like, that's one tool we have out there, but we really want to make sure things are flowing through the system and that we're using that data to say, okay, yeah, you have this one squeaky wheel. However, there's some things at a foundational level that if we just tightened up that implementation, this may not be a squeaky wheel any longer.
Right.
And
yeah.
then we're saving you. It's efficient. It's effective for the student, you know, that kind of thing. So we're trying to, you know, fill those gaps in multiple ways, but not lose the system because that's where the answer is.
Right. Yeah. And the answer for every single child is individualized, right? There isn't one size. That's something else that's really cool that I see in education too is happening is each child learns, every single one of us learns differently. And having a way and identifying the ways in which that child learns and in what that child's, so as you said, their social needs, their academic needs, their emotional needs, all of those. It isn't just, you know, it isn't just, you know, plug and play. You can't do that.
No, and I think that's a perfect example of where sometimes we're seeing behavior and we're going down, we're looking for behavioral strategies, when if you really looked at the root cause of what's happening, we've got an instructional issue, you know, their learning style or learning, you know, way of learning is different than how they're being instructed.
And is there something going on in their environment at home that is causing them to even not even be ready? Or are they coming to us hungry or hurting?
Yeah.
There's so many pieces to that puzzle. There really is.
Yes.
So I love that. Awesome. So I could talk to you about this for hours. I really could. I think we could just keep going and keep going and keep going. It's really up my alley for sure. You become a special educator and you never stop being a special educator, you know, no matter what. So Kelly, where do people go? Because I'm sure you're going to pique interest of lots of our listeners. Where do they go to learn a little bit more about what you guys are doing? And if they have a question, is there a way to find you on the website? I'd love for you to give some information out so that if people have questions, they know where to go.
Yeah, Sharem ISD has a website, and I'd be under special education if you want to locate me there. We have really shifted, I think, from our website to a lot of our tools and resources. We're Google, you know, a Google organization. So a lot of our tools and resources are in our Google system. However, if there was something you're looking for an example, we have an entire FBA, a functional behavioral assessment process that starts with one document and all of our tools and everything are linked from there. I get requests for that all the time, et cetera. All of those things are available. Just shoot me an email and all, you know, we're obviously not proprietary or anything like that. So everything is shareable. It's probably not, most of it not available just on our website.
Right, right. And that's the beautiful thing about educators. We are a group that share, a group that cares, and a group that if I'm doing something that's going to help your child and you're doing something that's going to help mine, let's share the information so that the children get the best that they possibly can from what we're doing. And I just I love that about education. I really do. You guys are amazing. And it just is, it's not heard enough out there what is happening.
Yes.
Because just like the podcast say, we are brighter together because of what you guys are doing, because of the sharing that happens, because of the amazing work that all of the educators and the educational system in the United States. Nobody here sits around and goes, gosh, I just wish that I could just get paid and not do my job. nobody does that. And I think there are so many, there's such an attitude out there that people are out there to do the weirdest things. And it's like, that's not who we are. So
right.
I love that. So, and I love that you can, that I can have a spot where you can tell your story. So thank you, Kelly, so much for coming on and telling. And I know this is just a little piece of the story that is Kelly and that is Charlevoix Emmett. So so thank you again for being here.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity. I am delighted to be able to share what we're doing.
Awesome. Thanks again. Happy New Year, by the way.
Yes, you too.